Well, again, welcome to you, and welcome to week four in our series called This Too Shall Pass. We've been spending time this entire month asking ourselves what lessons God might want us to learn in the midst of some of the seasons of life that come and go. Because the truth is, we all experience all different sorts of seasons in life, and I don't think God wants us to waste any single one of them. The good ones, the bad ones, the ones that feel upside down or right side up, whatever season it is that we're going through, I do not believe that God wants us to waste that season, because I really believe that there is something to learn. I really believe there is something that God wants us to be learning in the midst of every single season that comes our way. And last week, we talked about the season of life when life is good. Right, it's a season that it is always a gift from God, and it's never a guarantee. It's never a guarantee that we experience it at all, and it's never a guarantee that it lasts if we do happen to experience, because it's very possible that we might experience that good life for a moment, right? But that season, at some point, most likely will come to an end. And that's exactly what happened to one of the Bible's most famous heroes, a man by the name of David. And a couple years ago, my father-in-law, who is a pastor, my father-in-law and I spoke at a men's conference all about the life of this guy, David. And what we spoke about that weekend and what I learned from him, even just in preparing for that weekend, what I learned and what I experienced is so much of what I want to speak to you about today. Because this guy, David, he got to a place where he was living the high life. Okay, life was good for David, and then things changed pretty darn fast. In fact, David's entire life was one of drastic changes. He went from being a nobody, actually, in the beginning. He went from being a nobody to being a somebody just like that. He went from being a zero to being Israel's hero overnight. He morphed from a lowly shepherd boy into a mighty giant killer before everybody's eyes, right? That's the David we're talking about. If you grew up reading these stories in Sunday school, right? We're talking about this guy, David, the one who slayed the Philistine giant named Goliath. If you fast forward a bit, David is soon living in the king's palace. He's BFF with the king's son, Jonathan. He even married one of the king's daughters. And on top of all of that, God's prophet, Samuel, right? Prophets were these ones who spoke God's message to God's people. On top of all that David is experiencing, the prophet Samuel has announced that David is going to be the next king over all of Israel. David's flying high. I mean, David's experiencing one of those seasons in life when everything is going right. Maybe some of you in this room are in one of those seasons right now. That's exactly what we talked about last week. Maybe life is good, right? In your world, the sun's shining, the birds are singing, the flowers are blooming, and your favorite football team is winning every single week, right? You're just going, man, life is good. If that's the case, enjoy that season, right? Don't give an excuse for it. Just give God credit for it and milk it for all it's worth. But understand one thing, right? That things very well may change, okay? They did for David, and they often will for us too. And so what I want to do is I want to track for you how quickly and how drastically David's season changed, because he went from sunshine to tsunami in a hurry. And I want us to see how David weathered this tsunami, because there are some lessons here for us to learn. David actually goes down in biblical history as the man after God's own heart. And so I want to ask, how does this Bible hero respond when life gets rough? Okay, how does he handle the hard times that come his way, and what can we learn from him? That's what this morning is all about. And so to track with his story, we're going to turn to this part of David's story that's told in 1 Samuel chapter 21. Before we get there, I just want to fill you in on a couple blanks here so that you're up to speed by the time we get there. Saul is the current king of Israel at the moment. Saul becomes really, really jealous of David's success that he's experiencing, right? David is kind of rapidly rising in popularity. He's becoming a whole nation's hero, right? They're people, women in town are even singing songs about David. They're saying, Saul's killed thousands, but David's killed 10,000s, right? People are singing David's praises. And Saul, the current king, he gets jealous. Okay? And jealousy, just like it does for every single one of us, just like it does for you, and just like it does for me, whether we know it or not, jealousy junks up our hearts. And jealousy junks up Saul's heart, and he turns into a madman. Okay? And get this, right? He's so jealous, he's so upset that he actually tries to kill David. Okay? Son's best friend, right? Daughter's son. He actually tries to kill David. He actually puts a contract out on his head. And so what does David do? David runs, okay? He's no dummy, okay? David runs, and he flees for his life, and he becomes a fugitive. And in the process, he loses his residency in the palace. He loses his job. He loses his wife. He loses his best friend. He loses his spiritual mentor, right? Talk about a change in seasons. Right? To go from where David was to what he's experiencing right now. Now, keep in mind one thing here, that David has done nothing wrong. Right? He didn't do anything, right, at this point to deserve kind of this change in seasons here. He's done nothing wrong. He's actually done nothing but help Saul all the way up to this point. So is life fair for David? No, it's not fair. But as we learned a little bit last week, as we flipped through the book of Ecclesiastes, sometimes life is just not fair, right? The good things happen to the bad people, and the bad things happen to the good people, and it doesn't make sense, right? And so now when we get to 1 Samuel 21, we'll see that no, life is not fair for David, and David is actually starting to crack under the pressure. And I'm really so glad that the Bible doesn't try to airbrush its heroes. I'm glad that the Bible doesn't only paint them with the brightest, most positive brushstrokes, because what we see in 1 Samuel 21 is a David who is as real and as human as you and me, all right? And chapter 21 is definitely not a Kodak moment for our big Bible hero, David. Here's verses 1 and 2. So David went to the town of Nob to see Ahimelech the priest, and Ahimelech trembled when he saw him. "Why are you alone?" he asked. "Why is no one with you?" And David replied. He said, "The king sent me on a private matter," David said. "He told me not to tell anyone why I'm here, and I have told my men where to meet me later." What's David doing here? This is called lying. Okay? The king didn't send him on a special mission. The king's trying to kill him. And that's why David is on the run all by himself. He's lying, okay? On top of that, he's starting to get hungry, so he wants some food. Ahimelech says that there's nothing, but in verse 6, we see him say there's nothing but holy bread there for him to eat. And there were special conditions for, you know, who could, you know, eat this bread and when you could eat this bread. And David says, "I don't care. I want some bread to eat." On top of that, David asks for a weapon, and he's got something specific in mind. He wants a sword. And really, there's only one available. Look at verse 9. This is the priest responding to him. He says, "I only have the sword of Goliath the Philistine, who you killed in the valley of Elah," the priest responded. "It's wrapped in a cloth and behind the ephod. Take that if you want it, for there is nothing else there." And David replies, "There's nothing like it. Give it to me." He says, "Yeah, I'll take that. I'll take that sword." This is what Alanis Morissette would call ironic, don't you think? He wants a sword. Okay, David didn't need a sword to kill Goliath. He used a little slingshot and a couple little smooth stones, right? But now David is so rattled, he's so rattled that he's resorting to taking Goliath's sword for protection. I want to know, where's the David that stood before this giant in 1 Samuel 17 and said, "The Lord doesn't need weapons to rescue his people"? Where's that David? Okay, but things have changed, and now David wants a sword. Okay, look what happens next in verses 10 to 15. So David escaped from Saul and he went to King Achish of Gath, but the officers of Achish were unhappy about his being there. Isn't this David, the king of the land, they asked. Isn't he the one people honor with dances, singing? Told you, Saul has killed his thousands. David has killed 10,000s. Isn't this the guy? David heard these comments and he was very afraid of what King Achish of Gath might do. So he pretended to be insane, scratching on doors and drooling down his beard. Verse 14, finally, King Achish said to his men, must you bring me a madman, fellas? We already have enough of them around here. Why should I let someone like this be my guest? Okay, now you know why I said that this is not a real Kodak moment for David. He's lying, he's eating holy bread, he's carrying around Goliath's sword, and he's pretending to be insane by scratching on doors and drooling down his beard. Why in the world would I spend time reading all of this to you? Okay? Here's why this is important that you and I read this, because it is important for you and I to know that hard times knock us off our game. The hard times that we experience in life, they knock us off of our game. It's so easy to lose perspective, and all of a sudden, what do? We start acting in ways that we've never acted before. We start doing things we never really did before. We start trying things we never really tried before. We start relying on things that we never relied on before. We start depending on things that we never really depended on before. So it's hard times, they knock us off our game, right? So if you're in a difficult season right now, just acknowledge it. Right? And understand the dangers and understand the temptations. And whatever you do, don't go through it alone, because the hard times will knock you off your game and you need someone alongside of you helping to stay the course. Okay? Let's get back to David. Okay? It is safe to say that David is off of his game. Okay? And it is safe to say that he's hit rock bottom. In chapter 22, we'll see how rock bottom he hits. In chapter 22, David escapes and he ends up in a cave. He ends up in what's called the Cave of Adullam, okay? Now think about this for a second, okay? David's gone from living in a palace, sleeping on a king-size, you know, pillow top or memory foam mattress. He's gone from eating the richest foods, drinking the finest wines, being surrounded by his wife and his friends all of the time. He's gone from all of that to becoming a fugitive, living in a dark, dank, you know, scary cave. Try to imagine what David is feeling like in this cave. Try to imagine for a second what it might be feeling like to go from all of this up here to living in a cave down here. Imagine that for a second. Okay, now let's do more than imagine what he's feeling. Let's find out how he's feeling. If we look to Psalm 142, we'll actually find out. One thing we know about David is that David was a poet. And he was a writer, and he actually wrote dozens of the Psalms, which is a collection of these songs and poems that are contained in the Old Testament of the Bible. And Psalm 142 is one of those Psalms, it's one of those poems, it's one of those songs that David wrote while he was holed up in the cave of Adullam. Okay, so listen to the first four verses so we can see with our own eyes and we can hear with our own ears how it is that David is feeling. He says, I cry out to the Lord. I plead for the Lord's mercy. I pour out my complaints before him and I tell him all my troubles. When I'm overwhelmed, you alone know the way I should turn. Wherever I go, my enemies have set traps for me. I look for someone to come and help me, but no one gives me a passing thought. No one will help me. No one cares a bit about what happens to me. Okay? Do you feel David's despair in the moment? And do you ever feel the same way? Right? Do you ever feel that kind of despair? Right? Be honest. Right? You ever overwhelmed when life is hard? You ever feel alone? You ever feel like no one gives a rip about you? Do you ever feel like you're in a cave? Right? Caves are these dark, lonely, scary places. And I think every one of us, if we're being honest with ourselves, I think every one of us has logged some cave time in our life, right? Some of you are maybe there right now. The truth about your world is that the sun is shining and the flowers aren't blooming and the birds aren't singing right now, because those things don't happen in a cave. A cave is actually somewhere you end up when everything has been taken from you. Scary, lonely place to be. Maybe you feel like something's been taken from you, right? Maybe it's your health. Maybe it's a job that you love. Maybe it's your marriage or a relationship or your home or a loved one or a child or a friend. Maybe it's you know, the dreams of yours that have been taken from you. Maybe it's innocence of yours that's been taken from you. Now, I haven't really been a pastor for too terribly long, maybe about, 10 years in total if you add it all up, but it only takes a couple years sitting in the seat that I'm in to see how people respond, right, when things have been taken from them. Sadly, far too many people today respond in one of two ways. They either walk away from God or they whine about it all, okay? Often they walk away from God. Things have been taken from them. Why? Because they became disillusioned with God. Somewhere along the line, they bought into the spiritual lie that says, come to Jesus and you'll live a cave-free life forever. Right? Far too many people believe that God's primary job is to keep them happy and to keep them out of caves. And then when you end up in a cave, which you will, right, you conclude that God has let you down. And so you eventually walk away from him in disappointment. Okay? The other thing I see is this from people in the caves. The other thing I see that people do is they whine about it. There's really no other pleasant way to describe it. There's really no other pleasant word to use to describe the other response that I see from people when they're in the cave. They whine about it. They may not shake their fists at God. They may not walk away from God, but they do open their mouths, and to anybody who will listen, they whine about what is happening to them. And whining is a lot like worrying. Gives you something to do, but it's really pretty counterproductive, okay? It's just a time waster, and it's an energy drainer. So the question is then, what did David do? That's what so many of us do, but what did David, what did this man after God's own heart, what did he do in the cave? He didn't always get it right, but he did several things right in the cave. And I want to look at two of them this morning. So today, what I want to do is I want to share with you a do, and I want to share with you a don't for anyone who's feeling like they're in a cave. A do and a don't. And I'm going to start with the don't, okay? This is counsel for all cave dwellers in the moment, okay? Here's the don't. Don't lose God in the cave. Don't lose God in the cave. When you find yourself in a dark, lonely place, it's so easy to lose sight of God. It's so easy to give up hope. It's so easy to just throw in the towel and just say, yeah, forget it. I'm done with this. Tried it. Over it. No, thank you. But David never did that. In fact, with brutal honesty, he pours out his heart to God. Okay, he admits his feelings of despair. We read a little bit about that. He admits his feelings of despair, but get this, he never lets go of God and he never loses hope. Let me show you, okay? But to do that, we're going to look to Psalm 57. Psalm 57 is another song. It's another one of these poems that David wrote about this time when he's escaping from Saul and hiding in a cave. And I want you to look at verses 2 and 3 and verse 7. Here's what David writes. He says, I cry out to God Most High, to the God who will fulfill his purposes for me. He will send help from heaven to save me, rescuing me from those who are out to get me. And then here's verse 7. My heart is what? My heart is confident. My heart is confident in you, O God. No wonder I can sing your praises. David believes two things according to these verses. Number one, he believes that God is going to fulfill his purposes for his life. And number two, he believes that God is going to rescue him. And because of those two beliefs, verse 7 says that David's heart is confident. in God. Even in a cave, David believed that God was at work and that God would work things out. So here's a question for you. Are you maybe in a cave right now? And if so, here's a second question. Do you believe that good things can happen in a cave? David did. And so must we, right? We got to hang on to the belief that God does some of his best work right in the middle of a cave. In fact, here's what I really believe. Maybe this is something you want to write down here this morning. Here's what I really believe. That cave dwelling time, if that's where we're at this morning, cave dwelling time is character building time. Right? Caves are where God makes us face things that we need to face. Caves are where God forms us and when he shapes us and when he makes us better and when it makes us more into the people that he wants us to be. We got to believe that in faith. We got to believe that the time spent in the cave is time, an opportunity for us to build character inside of us. We cannot lose sight of God in the cave. Okay, that's the don't. Now here's the do. Do make the most of your time in the cave. Okay, let's go back to 1 Samuel 22. This is where things start getting really interesting to me. Let's see what happens next in 1 Samuel 22, verses 1 and 2. So David left Gath and escaped to the cave of Adullam. And soon his brothers and all of his relatives joined him there. And then others began coming, men who were in trouble or in debt or who were just discontented, until David was the captain of about 400 men. Okay, so God sends people to David, right? This was his prayer. God, you got to send someone to help me. You got to send someone to rescue me, okay? And so first his family shows up, and then according to verse 2, others begin showing up. About 400 others, to be exact. So who were these 400 others? Okay, unfortunately for David, it was not the varsity team, right? Didn't look like it was the JV team. I'm not even sure if it was the freshman team that showed up, right? The Bible describes them as men who were in trouble or in debt, who were just discontented. That's who shows up for David. Okay, here's a little question for you. Has God ever given you a gift that you flat out didn't ask for or that you didn't really want? David just got one of those gifts. Okay, did David need an army? Oh, you better believe he needed an army. You better believe that David needed some backup. But 400 misfits, 400 disgruntled, dysfunctional, and discontent men, I gotta think that that's not exactly what David had in mind for the moment. So what does David do? Does he kick them out? Tell them to go find a cave of your own? No, he doesn't do that. Does he have them come on inside and sit in a circle on rocks and each one go around and share what it is that's made them so sad and angry and lonely? No, he doesn't do that. Okay, so let me tell you what David did do. He turned the cave into a training center for those 400 men. He took those whiners and he turned them into winners. He took this motley crew and he formed them into a fierce band of warriors, okay? They later become what the Bible calls, get this, these 400 misfits later become what the Bible calls David's mighty men, okay? And David becomes their captain. And later when David actually does become a king, these men become his elite army, and some of them become his most trusted inner cabinet members. But get this, their transformation happens where? In the cave. We cannot miss this. Their transformation happens in the cave. Right? David could have taken one look at these misfits and said, "No, thank you." But he didn't. He accepted the challenge. He accepted this gift that God sent him. And he flexed a little bit of his leadership muscles and he made the most of what came his way. Turned the cave into a training center, okay? Was God up to something? Was God maybe testing David to see how he would handle this cave time and this cave full of oddballs? Is God testing him? Absolutely. Okay? Is God maybe up to something during your time in the cave? I think the answer is yes. Okay, you may not like where you're at right now. You may not be where you thought that you would be right now, 2019, right? And you may not like what God has given to you right now. You might not like the gift that God has sent your way. But here's the truth. Each of us is somewhere, and we have been given something. And so the question is, will we be faithful? Okay? Will we and will you and will I make the most? Will we do everything we can to make the most of our time in the cave and the resources that we have been given there? Maybe you're in a cave because of a relationship that has fallen apart, or maybe it's a divorce. I don't know. What will you do in that moment if that's something that's been taken from you? Will you whine about it? Take every chance you get to cut down your ex or whoever hurt you or did you wrong. Jump quickly into another relationship and the next one after that without really taking time to stop and think. Or would you face the things that you need to face in your life? Would you focus on your character and your heart and maybe your relational skills and use that time to become more like Christ and become more of the person that God designed you to be? Maybe you're in a cave, you know, because of bills and debt and a lifestyle that just little by little has gotten out of control. What will you do? Whine about it? Point the finger at someone else about it. Look for a quick fix to face the problem. Or maybe you call time out. Maybe you sit down with someone who can help you. Maybe you choose from that moment on that you're going to use that time in the cave to start learning some wise skills to get yourself in order and to live your life in a way that honors God, right? Maybe you're in a cave due to some kind of grief or some kind of loss. The question is, what will you do? You just get angry? Just blame God about it all? Or would you cry out to God and would you pursue God with confidence in the midst of whatever pain you're experiencing? Really, there's just two questions I want to close with here for all cave dwellers who are feeling like they're in this place. Two questions. Am I hanging on to God in the midst of my despair? And how can I make the most of the mess that I'm in? Friends, God hasn't given up on you. He isn't letting go of you just because you're in a cave. He's in the cave with you. And I believe that he does some of his best work right where you are. Let me pray. God, I really do believe that there are, you know, some of us who are in this place. Started out earlier today singing about being in the fire, being in, you know, storms and feeling like walls are closing in. God, now we can add a new little metaphor to the list. God, some of us know what it's like to be living in a dark, dank, you know, cave. And God, for anyone who's there, I pray that you would find a way to remind us that you are right there with us. God, it might feel like a lonely place, but I pray that you would help us to know that you are standing in that cave with us, and it's right there, right in that spot, right in the middle of the pain, right in the middle of the hardship, right in the middle of the grief, right in the middle of the loss, God, that you might do some of your finest work in our lives. So God, for anyone who's needing to experience some real transformation, I pray that we might see, hey, that time is now, even if we're in a place where we don't think that kind of transformation really happens, God. So would you help us to constantly hold on to you, God? I'm praying that anyone is in the cave here today, that they wouldn't lose sight of you, and that they would absolutely make the most of this time. Turn their cave time into a training center of their own. To become the people that you want us to be, God. To lead in the way that you want us to lead. To follow you in the way that you want us to follow you, God. God, whatever it is that we're feeling, wherever it is that, you know, we feel like we're at right now, I pray that you would just give us a whole ton of confidence that you are there with us. And that alone might be what we need to continue to take the next step out of the cave and into the life that you've called us to live. God, we thank you for who you are and for being a God who loves us so much and who is constantly by our side. And we pray all of these things in your name this morning.